Welcome to the National Federation of the Blind's 2025 Senior Retreat, a time for empowerment, connection and growth. A special thanks to Janie Degenshain, Zoom administrator, and her team for a seamless retreat. Your dedication makes this event possible. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. Let it be.
Performance here, and we are very pleased to have Glenn Crosby here. Glenn, not only should you do whatever it is you're going to do for this hour, but we want you to do something that we did on Sunday, and that was take no more than 2 minutes to introduce yourself. I will tell everybody that Glenn is president of our National Senior Division. And other than that, he gets to decide what else he wants you to know. Glenn?
So I would say to you that the senior division is made up of people just like you, and we would love for you to come and be a part of us and participate, and we do a number of activities. And this retreat is a major activity that we organize and provide annually. So that's just one of the things we do. My background is that my wife and I were in business for ourselves for over 45 years. We were in the food business, had a number of locations around Houston, Texas, including some vending machines and other snack bars and little hamburger joints and things like that. I have been a part of the National Federation of the Blind since 1967. And so, I have a lot of experience in, this organization, been a part of it, been glad to have it. We are what we call, an extended family. Once you get connected, you will begin to feel that. I think everybody that's been around a while, does feel it. And what that means is you don't have to know a person personally. If you have questions and they have the answers, we'll try to get you connected to those folks, and they'll be glad to visit with you and explain things to you on just about any topic you can imagine. So that's what our family does. We also try improve public policy as it regards blind people and blindness. We try to expand opportunities for blind people, and that particularly has to do with education and job opportunities, and also opportunities for seniors. And I think people kind of forget that our country is in what a lot of people refer to as a gray tsunami. And of course, as people age, many of us lose our eyesight, right? So we're getting more and more blind seniors than we've ever had before. And mostly they find themselves isolated, and they don't have any connection. And we try to find those folks, and we try to bring them in, and we try to let them know what's available to them, what kind of programs and services are available. And of course, access to information is a major, major hurdle for people once you cannot use your eyes to get it, reading and other things. So that's one reason why we talk about technology as much as we do, because that's your basic information source. However, we also provide NFB Newsline, which again is accessible by any phone. You can access it with your other personal devices as well. but Newsline has around 600 publications on it, a lot of newspapers, including national newspapers and international newspapers, and a thick stack of magazines that surely will satisfy most people's reading curiosity. There's cooking, and somebody mentioned recipes a while ago. There's recipes, of course, in some of the magazines, or there's magazines about recipes, but also every newspaper just about has some section that has recipes in it. So Newsline is a very, very great information resource, and it's very, very easy to use, and it's free. So those are the things I would bring to your attention. And we can have some questions if you have questions for me, personal, want to know more about me later. I'll be glad to answer them if I can. Oh, before I skip, we have four grown children, seven grandchildren, and one great grandchild. So that's our family. And one area of importance to all seniors, but particularly blind seniors, is managing health care. And we find ourselves having to manage taking prescription medication. Many of us do. We need to learn techniques of how we can go about that safely and do it reliably. And so we do talk about that quite a bit. Is Shelley Koppel with us yet?
Yes, I sure am.
All right. So Shelley has also been a part of the National Federation of the Blind for many years. She's a very capable person. She's now found herself in the gray tsunami part of it, of life. She is here this afternoon to talk to us about managing health care at home. Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay, hi. Welcome, and thank you for the invite to come and speak today. I'm secretary of our National Senior Division, and Glenn has me beat by about 3 years. I think I joined the Federation in 1970. I was just out of high school, and I got recruited to go to a training center in the state of Idaho, which is where I'm from. And a lot of the people there were longtime Federationists, and the rest is sort of history. I've lived several different places with different jobs and married and different things like that. So I now live in the great state of South Carolina. I'm in West Columbia, which is just across the river from our capital city. And my husband is Frank Koppel. He's been a member of the NFB for probably equally as long or close to it as I have been. And we also have raised 3 children between us and have 6 grandchildren. And they're the joy of our lives, and we just are, had been in good health until kind of the unexpected happened for me in 2023. And I'll talk about that, but I thought I might start from a little bit different angle of the fact that all these things that we're learning in this retreat are to help us to be more confident. And hopefully, with some of the skills that we're talking about of technology and the use of Braille and various kinds of technology, and just common sense. I've heard Janie talk about how you can identify things by putting a rubber band around them, and I've done that many times. We just want to live life as in the most confident way we can, and I think this is a good place to learn and to start. And along with that comes organization. And so in your home, most of us have some sort of organization to the way we do things. Sometimes my organization gets a little out of whack, and I have to regroup and pull things out of cupboards and drawers and restack it and redo it and throw away and reorganize and stuff. But I've got a system to the way that I handle things in my home. And that is also important. It doesn't matter how high tech or low tech it is. And if it's a very different way that you do it from somebody else, or maybe somebody's techniques you've heard about here make sense and you would incorporate those. I've been known to do that as well. We had a session a year ago or so on some organizational things from a lady, and the way that she managed some of the drawers in her of her clothing, I ended up taking her up on some of the techniques. I thought they made sense. So we love to learn from each other. The title of my talk today was How to Deal with the Unexpected. So as we live our lives and in our neighborhoods, I've heard a lot of us talk about how the neighbors get to know you. And even though they don't maybe know you on a totally personal level, they know you enough to wave and say hi and know kind of some of your habits of coming and going, or maybe you do your own shoveling and they see you outside shoveling snow, or they see you going to the mailbox. Part of that flows over into knowing who you can go to in the time of an emergency. And also, if you have a spouse or significant other, that would possibly be the first person you would think of. Maybe they're not always available. So there's some other person, a family member or a close friend that you might have that you would go to in times of an emergency, something you would need help with that, you know, it's come upon you suddenly. And maybe it's going to be a trip to the doctor or the emergency room or something. You also want somebody who you know well enough, if you can, that's going to speak on your behalf and know your independent style and know the confidence with which you live life. And that can, I've sometimes found medical people to be the most unhelpful people. Sometimes they can just really come from an angle of, oh my gosh, you're blind. Oh my Lord. You know what, here, can I help sit you down, you know, in a chair? I mean, to that level. And I've also met people that are very respectful, would, if you need to fill out paperwork, will take you to a separate room where all your business isn't being broadcast to everybody in the waiting room. And they're very respectful that way. So I've seen both sides of it, but having somebody that could help speak on your behalf, because you don't know what this emergency might cause and you're flustered. And my thing is, I can lose my words. I know my thoughts, but I can lose my words because I'm flustered. And that can help you get information. Maybe this person could help take notes. They would at least be there to listen to what the medical people are saying to you, so that you've got two sets of ears hearing the same thing. And that as you're trying to process and you're feeling badly in the process, they can help you decipher what some of the directions might have been or what the layout of the plan of action is going to be. I've found that to be helpful. I never wanted to sign up for that sort of thing, but I've found it as I've gotten into this more gray hair area of life that it's a very helpful thing to have. And asking questions. Do not be afraid to ask questions. This is your life. It's your body. If you're dealing with a medical thing or whatever the emergency is, it could be needing to make a flight to go somewhere on a sudden notice, maybe a family member's in danger or in need of help. Asking questions, you know, getting the most information that you can about whatever you're facing is very helpful. And no question is too small. Don't ever forget that. Sometimes when we're in this new stage of losing vision, it's like, well, I don't want to come across as not seeming to have a good head on my shoulders, or like I don't know what I'm supposed to know already in life. That doesn't matter. At that point, you're needing to be to get clear information. You're needing to clarify what's going on, and questions are the best way to get those things accomplished. Another thing you might need to have figured out is, where do you keep information? Like, I'm thinking insurance cards, maybe your key, you're keeping information. Okay, let me start with this. Insurance cards. Okay, you go to a hospital or a medical appointment you've never been to before, they're going to ask for your medical insurance cards. And in my wallet, I've got those in the various little pockets in the wallet that they fit in, but I've got them labeled. I've got them written with Braille on them. Now they don't ever, and people go, oh, wow, somebody Brailled that for you. You know, that's really cool that they do that. And I go, no, they didn't do it. I did it. When I get a new card, the old soft paper ones, I would actually Braille right on them. Social Security number, SSN. I'd think of a way to I'd abbreviate it. SSN, Social Security number. SSC, Social Security card. MED, Medicare. I'd do things like that. If they were a hard plastic, I would find a way to put with maybe a Dymo labeling tape or something. And you know Braille, I'd put a little note on there, and there's a place, even on a debit card, that you can put Braille, and it does not interfere with what part of the card goes in the machine. You can do that. Sometimes another idea that I've come up with for like a debit card or some kind of a card like that would be to make a little Braille on clear plastic paper, Braille all the numbers kind of in sets of four, like four or five lines with about eight or nine characters on it. And that way, including your spaces, and that way you've got the Braille that matches the numbers on your card. And it's, you may memorize your cards. I do also, the ones I use the most, but in time of an emergency, your thinking could get a little skewed with nervousness and whatever. So it's good to have those kind of things Brailled in a certain way if you can. That's a good reason for learning Braille. Numbers and the alphabet can be very useful for labeling things. And you may not be at a position in life of really caring about reading a book in Braille, but maybe to play cards for recreation, or in this idea of identifying things, it can be very helpful. It helps us be literate, and that's a really important aspect to things. Knowing where your keys are, knowing where your phone is, anything like that, that your personal ID. Now, another thing I do on my ID, which isn't necessary, but I like to know how it's facing in my wallet. Is that my picture facing out, so that if I could just turn it around and show somebody, would they be able to see my picture? So again, I put a little tiny piece of tape on the back left corner, right corner of my card. And that tells me, I feel it real quickly. It doesn't interfere with anything. Nobody else really even notices, but it lets me know which is the back side of the card and which is the front side of the card. If I can know things like that, I like to. So knowing where these things are, having a wallet in your purse where your keys are may be very handy. Those kinds of things for points of an emergency. So my emergency situation happened August 25th, 2023. And we'd just come back from our state convention the weekend before. And so this is like Friday, the end of that next week. And it's a warm day. We're sitting out on the patio, just kind of enjoying the coffee or something in the morning. All of a sudden, I find myself in just immense pain in my stomach. And I had no idea what it was from. And it was kind of quick that I discerned that it wasn't just like needing to find the facilities or anything like that, that it was a pretty serious thing. My husband is also blind. And so our quick fast track thing to do would be to call the ambulance, which is what we did. And they came to the house. And of course they'll put the IV in right there. They actually let my husband ride to the hospital in the front of the ambulance, which we thought was very generous. We asked, we didn't expect them to say yes, but they did. And so I got to the emergency room, and because I'd come in the ambulance, it was a little faster track to the back of the room where the doctors were going to be seeing you and stuff. So they determined that I'd had a perforated colon. And I'm thinking, perforated colon? First of all, what exactly is that? And second of all, how in the world did something like that happen? And so that day, the doctor on call at the hospital came in, and after I'd been there a little while, and they'd done some testing, figured out what the situation was, and that it was pretty serious. And he said, we'll try you on antibiotics overnight. If it's not good, we'll take you to surgery tomorrow morning. So next morning, Frank had stayed overnight because the doctors tend to come around fairly early in the day. And he did. And Frank goes, well, do I have time to go home and kind of clean up and come back when is surgery? And he goes, oh, about 45 minutes. And Frank's going, oh, well, okay, I'm here. So had surgery, found myself in the hospital for the next 8 days. And when I came out of all the medication and woke up and stuff like that, I found out that I had a colostomy bag, something totally foreign to me. I'd never known anybody that had had that, just really quite a shock. And so the next days were filled with, the first few days were filling you with a lot of medication that's going to kind of level you out, get your body back in sync like it's supposed to be, find out how this colostomy bag is going to be working. And they'd taken 10 inches of my colon at that point. And they said, there may be more surgery later, but right now that's where you're at. And so there came around an educator from the hospital. And she was a lady that was probably close to retirement age, but she'd been there for a long time. And my blindness didn't seem to throw her off. She knew that I needed to learn about how to deal with this thing for myself. And I expressed that I would want to do that as much as I could. And she came up with some creative ways of helping me to figure out. Her husband was kind of a project person. He liked to work with tools and stuff. And she came up with a little circular kind of piece of PVC pipe that I could use as a guide to help me learn how to put on my colostomy bag and stuff like that. Now, there were aspects of it that I did not feel as comfortable handling, but anyway, in the hospital, they were very good about this. And so this process took a few days to kind of get familiar with. And the other thing was, it was over a holiday. It was over Labor Day weekend. So I think there was a little delay in getting out, maybe because of kind of the holiday weekend and staff and how familiar I was, how comfortable I felt with everything. So I get home and now all of a sudden I've got new products to deal with. I've got that I'm going to have to use all the time. There's going to be my unfamiliarity with just all of this and living with a bag. And they said I would for a while. They didn't know for sure at that point how long, but we knew it was going to be for a period of time. They set up health nurses that came to the house twice a week and would help me with an aspect of changing. You don't just change the bag where the waist goes into every day, but you also have a sleeve that's kind of over the whole system on your side. And the nurses would come and help with that aspect of things, because there can be, you know, just like infections and stuff, sometimes colorations of things change or whatever. And I did have lots of questions, and they wanted to be sure that questions were answered and that I understood how to use these new products and stuff that I had. And so I had talking about organization, I had a little hanging bag thing that was in the bathroom on the towel rack that had all my items that I would need every day for dealing with this colostomy bag. And there were products that the nurses ordered that came in the mail. And I found a place in a dresser that I could put those that was near, that was handy to get to and all that kind of thing. So I learned what all the various aspects of caring for this colostomy thing were. And in the process, I found people. We did some research and found people that I actually knew from my church that had children, two different ladies that ended up having children. One was more in her 20s, early 30s, and the other one was more like an 18-year-old son that had been living with colostomy bags their whole entire life, or the majority of it. And that was very fascinating to me. And these ladies were very helpful. They ended up being part of my team of people that I would call on if I had questions, besides what the nurses and people that came to the house would tell me. A couple of times, one of the friends lived within about 10 minutes of my house. And on a couple of occasions, I had kind of a blowout to where I was like in a panic, didn't know how to quite go about all this. And I'd call this gal, Stacy was her name, and she'd go, "I'm on my way." And she just knew that with the kind of newness to all of this and whatever I was dealing with, it, that it was concerning to me. And so she came over and would always put me at ease. She had a very calm personality, and it's like, okay, this is, we'll do this and this and this. And it, in about 10 minutes, it'd be over with. And she'd sit and visit, so that it made me feel like I care about you. I'm not just here because you're blind and you need all this help, but she truly just spent time with me. And that meant a lot to me. Those kinds of people in my life were very helpful. My husband, Frank, did an awful lot to help out, because I was sitting on the couch a lot for a while, kind of recuperating from all this that I've been through. I could eventually get up, and about a few weeks, I was up and around and fixing meals again and doing some things. Your more housekeeping things that are a little more involved, he just really pitched in and did a lot to help me out. And that was very important. Let's see, there was something I was going to catch here. Anyway, I had a thought and I lost it, so I'll just keep moving on. So in the fact of being organized, I did have phone numbers that I kept track of for the company who sent the nurses. There was a 24-hour on-call number so that if I did have a question at any time or a concern about when the next nurse was going to come, or maybe they hadn't communicated quite as quickly as I thought I would hear from them, I could call this organization. So I kept their paperwork and phone numbers on my coffee table so that I didn't have to, you know, worry about where to find things. I kept them really out and open. And also just doctor appointments in general. I didn't have a whole lot. I had kind of a, you know, a month, well, the first 2 or 3 weeks and then a month. And then come January of 24, I was able to have a reconnection surgery where they put my colon back together. In the process, they took a little more of the colon and another aspect of it. And, but I was able to be reconnected. And I found out later that from one of my nurses that 10 years prior to this, that would not have happened. So I felt very fortunate that, I'd been able to have that surgery and, be reconnected. So that eliminated the need for the bag. The wound itself healed up really well. The surgeries I had, especially the last one, was a robotic one. So really there was not a lot to recover from. There were little, I would call them punch holes. Sort of, they didn't feel like deep wounds or anything, but you could tell they evidently fill your abdomen up with air, and then they kind of, you know, they figure it all out, you know, where's the exact spot to go in and fix what they need to fix. And so that was the reason I had all these different places on my abdomen, and they all healed up. A majority of them were kind of surface, but everything is healed really well. And one thing I would say is just keep up with your different, can't think of the word I want. When it's time to go for a scheduled test, like your colonoscopy or a heart checkup or whatever you're needing to do, when it's designated that that's when you should start checking up on things, I would highly recommend that, because through the years prior to all of this, I had dealt with some diverticulosis, which I found out through colonoscopies. I dealt with polyps a little bit, which I found out through colonoscopies, and they definitely aren't fun. They're less fun when you have a colostomy bag, because I did have to do that for my last surgery, which was not as bad actually as I thought it would be. But so getting those checkups are very crucial, I think, as we age, because they help us to stay on track. It keeps us familiar with the medical person that's the expert in that area. And then when you have things crop up, I think it keeps us a little more less afraid to go in and get things checked on, because we've been there, we know the doctor. And I know that since COVID, sometimes it's hard to get doctor appointments or you have to wait a long time, but hang in there, because those things are very important. Your health is very important to keep up with like that. And I'm very thankful. I've just been very blessed to otherwise be healthy. I'm pre-diabetic, so the talk about that today was very helpful to me. And I keep an eye on what I need to with that. But otherwise, I've really never had a lot of issues in life that have caused me a lot of distress, and I'm very thankful for that. Having your support system and all that. So I would be open for questions if people want to ask them things about, you know, any aspect of my talk or the organization or, you know, networking with people, however that goes, I'd be happy to answer.
This is
Shelly. We're going to move to questions in just a moment. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So Shelly mentioned a couple of things that I want to kind of zero in on. And one is she mentioned that her husband, Frank, was a caregiver. And very often we think of ourselves as being the object of care, but many of us from time to time are called upon to be caregivers. Blind people are caregivers. And so some of these things we're talking about, you may need to know to help somebody else. If you have a spouse or any loved one, friend, you may be called upon to be a caregiver, and blind people are caregivers. So just bear that in mind. Some of these techniques, it would be helpful to know if you are put in a position of providing care for someone else. So that's one thing. The other thing is, Shelly mentioned important telephone numbers. Now, she and I both use Braille, so that's a given for us. But if you don't use Braille, you can use some other forms of keeping up with phone numbers. One is a very inexpensive tape recorder. You can put those, you can tape record telephone numbers and find them and use them. There's another device. It's also a form of recording, but it's called a pen friend. And we can talk about that if anybody has an interest. But so find a way for you to be able to keep up with these important telephone numbers, because you're not always going to have someone available to you to get those phone numbers for you. So it's very helpful that you be able to do those yourself. So if people have questions for Shelly, you know, please raise your hand or say your name, and we'll try to take you in order.
This is Judith.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to congratulate you on your healing.
Oh, thank you.
And I had a couple of things. What did you ever find out what caused the, you had a perforated colon, you said?
Right. I really don't know exactly. I had been on some medic because I had diverticulosis, and I knew that was kind of a big deal in my check. I was on a medication that was supposed to be really kind of rough on your stomach, but I was taking it for my knee, and I'm dealing with an issue with that as we speak. But and I had been on several rounds of it because I was going to convention, wanted to be able to walk at our national convention in the summer, and was making some out of town trips and stuff. And I'm not, my thought is, they did say it was rough on your stomach. My thought is it could have contributed to it. I don't know if it did, but it could have, I think.
Okay. I also, I don't know what was going on in 2023, but in July 31st of 2023, I broke my hip.
Ooh.
And ended up in the hospital for a month on rehab and that sort of thing. But during the course of that, people were having to, the church came through for me because I live alone. And I had to figure out how to pay my bills. People had to bring me all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
How to pay my bills while I'm on Dilaudid. And it was insanity. And I was just very fortunate that the church came through and, you know, had to get a lockbox for the house. And I've just always been very organized. And I had already made all the arrangements for my funeral and my death and all the documents, and but I had never thought about what happens if you live. What happens if you go into a place for a while and you're alive, and who's going to pay your bills and all this stuff? And it really was a wake-up call for me to organize even more. I typed up all of these phone numbers, and they're all organized now. And I mean, I don't do Braille, but everything is just a lot more organized. I have somebody coming over to my house in a couple of weeks to go over my home with me. I've always been very organized anyway, but just to go over where everything is located so that if I, and some of this just has not only to do with being blind, but just getting older. I'm just getting older, and I've done a lot in my life, and I have a lot of stuff, and so I just want somebody else to know where it's at.
Well, that's what
Yeah.
that's yeah. I've still got we've still got some paperwork to do, some of that end of life stuff that we haven't. They asked me every time I was in the hospital, did you have this and that? And we've got very general things that we both know about, but we don't have it as much written in on paper. So, or it's a very general will. We need to be more specific. But you're right.
Yeah.
Our church friends came through as well, and that's how Frank got his rides back and forth to the hospital, and food to eat when he needed it, and some things like that. So yeah,
Yeah. But
it's
thank you.
you're
Other
welcome.
questions? Okay, well.
And I just might add something. I know that Sherry, that's on our call this week, I don't know if she's here today, but she's one of the friends I met during this time, because she had called into our Federation Center finding out about vision loss, and in the process of talking to the fellow that's at our office, found out that she had a colostomy bag. And lo and behold, I thought, wow, there's other people. So I got Sherry, and that's how she's gotten more involved in the NFB and in our senior division. So it's been a real blessing, a lot of ways. So,
I did have another thing I wanted to ask Glenn about.
surely,
Is it Glenn?
surely.
Yeah. I just found out about another organization, Fighting Blindness or something, and they do a lot of work with treatments with AMD, which is what I have. And I think that your organization focuses on how to deal with the blindness. Do you do any work with do you do any legislative work or lobbying?
All the time, all the
Okay,
time,
so you're
all the
out there in
time.
Congress telling, asking them to do research or whatever. Is that correct?
Well, we are in Congress, and that we have various issues that we talk with them about. We the National Federation of the Blind does not focus a lot on the medical part of blindness because we focus more on how to live our lives if with blindness. And there are a lot of other organizations that are working in research. So but we're very happy to participate if there's tests. Some people want to volunteer for research, and if especially if they want to, if they need people to try out a technique or medication or something like that. But we don't get into that aspect of eyesight and blindness. In fact, people call us regularly wanting to know about doctors, and we don't recommend eye doctors.
So you advocate for services for the blind. Is that what you're saying?
Services, opportunities,
Okay.
things
Civil
of that nature.
rights.
Yeah,
Yeah.
rights.
Primarily a civil rights organization.
Yes, primarily. And we have another person with a hand raised. I don't know if we can
Surely.
still take people. Yes, Jennifer.
Yes, Shelley, that's quite an ordeal that you went through. If I may comment, fortunately you have your insurance cards. I am a person who, much to my chagrin, has several multiple medical issues, and I'm on serious medication. I have serious allergies. So the one thing I have done, and maybe this would help some other people, is either having your cell phone or somewhere, but I have a binder that lists all of my medications, all of my allergies, all of my immunizations, all of my surgeries, because if you need to go for a consult, these are questions that you're going to be asked, and therefore the information is right at your fingertips. I am probably the least techie person on the call. Most of you probably have this in your iPhone or in your regular phone, but I would highly recommend that you have this with you because you may need it at any point in time, and there's no point in resurrecting the wheel.
That is true.
That's a good tip. That's a good tip. And I need to get at it, and mine will be in Braille when I do it. But I do need to do that.
We have someone labeled as iPhone with their hand raised.
That's me. This is Patrice.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted just to commend Ms. Shelley for her story. A lot of us know her in our chapter, but didn't know her story because that happened after, like she said, the state convention. And saw her the other night, and you would not tell that anything major had happened in her life because her and Mr. Frank were dancing at our Valentine's party.
Yeah.
I can relate to Michelle. I thought my life was over at 50 when I became blind, and I went through through that state of getting my papers in order as well. And I have all of my information listed. It's on my refrigerator. So if someone come in my home, because I do live by myself, they will have all of that information. I could just tell them, go to the refrigerator because everything is there. Doctor names, medication, my policies, everything is there. Mm-hmm. And that's for my kids as well because they don't live with me and they live out of state. So if they come home, they're going to come into the midst of my situation, and they need to be up to date on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but all that thing, everything is listed out for them.
Mm-hmm. Good. Very good.
This is Sherry.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Sherry.
I knew Shelley's story because Marty got me in touch with her because the two main things I had to worry with about was my macular degeneration when I first started out with, that was my first eye problem, was how do I do a cat litter was number one. And then how was I going to do my ostomy bag? And fortunately, Shelley got hers reversed, and that was, she's very fortunate for that. But I have all my information. My sister and I made forms out, and then, and I do have my daughter already for my health power of attorney and all that stuff I have took care of. So I don't have any problems, you know, with her taking care of me and having those papers my sister and I made. But it's like the lady earlier had said about the doctors, phone numbers, immunizations, allergies and stuff like that. So, and it's good to stay on top of everything because I have one doctor I have to stay on top of all the time, but I have no choice because I have so many things going on, but be sure and stay on top of your doctors if they start getting slack, because you have you're the one that's most important and they're supposed to be taking care of you. So just remember that you're most important. And sometimes those doctors slack off a lot. They think they know more than you do, and they don't.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've enjoyed this very much.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Janie, with a comment. Besides having all your information for yourself, some significant person should also have it. So if you take a picture of the things that are on your refrigerator, or somebody can take a picture of it and send it to your son, that might be advisable. Just not having it in your home, but also in their capable hands. That's just my comments. And I think there's somebody with a hand raised, Liz.
That's Musi.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that I turned 80 and I decided to see a gerontologist. And I don't know if anybody else does, but I figured I'm going to a doctor who knows something about old people. And I loved the experience and I'm very happy. I mean, you know, you can go to all the specialists, but that's a good one to start with, I think. And I really appreciate this. I like the idea of the refrigerator, tell them just everything's on the refrigerator. And I and my husband and I are both donating our bodies to science. And that makes me so nervous. Like, you got to make a phone call. Who's going to make the phone call? But we're talking about it anyway. This is very interesting. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments?
This is Judith. I just wanted to make another comment about this. This is somewhat new. I've been dealing with this for a little over a year, you know, just getting worse with my vision. But I just noticed I get very escalated and aggravated. Somebody was talking about when you go to the doctor, somebody will help you fill out the form. It has to do with the technology. Everybody wants me to fill something out on some kind of a device that has a glossy screen, and there's nothing in paper anymore. And everybody wants you to go to a website, and it's a lot easier for me on a phone. It just seems like when you said that your organization advocates for the blind, everyone seems to be very sensitive to the hearing impaired. There's a lot of stuff out there for that. But when it comes to using the phone, that's just not the way things are going. They want you to go to a website for everything. Have you run into this at all? Or is there...
We run into it all the time. And we have been and still are working at making all of these websites and applications accessible non-visually.
Okay.
Another thing I might mention, Judith, is you have to also, in your situation, I would just flat out say to the people up front, now, I don't know, you may not carry, you may not use a long white cane, I don't know, but that is definitely an identifier of the fact that you have a vision difficulty. And so what that does is it gives you kind of a right to speak up and say, look, my vision does not allow me to do this. If somebody could please help me with this, and sometimes you do have to get a little insistent or ask them, could you please, when you're making the appointment, print out the papers and send them to me. I will fill them out and take them back.
That's a good idea because they don't want to put anything in the mail. It costs money. They really, a lot of these programs they're contracting with do not even allow for paper. But yes, you're right. I am pretty assertive. I'm used to saying I'm visually impaired and I need help. And
okay,
just getting aggravating, I think, for me. Thank you.
I'll share this little story with you. My wife had a doctor's appointment a couple of years ago. And when we got to the office, of course, she signed in, or she told them that she was there. They signed her in. But right away, somebody came and said, well, we have this little booklet, basically, that you have to read, and we don't have the Braille copy here. So you're going to have to make another appointment. Well, first of all, my wife doesn't read Braille, but she said to the staff, and she said it loud enough for everybody in the waiting room to hear. She said, do you actually make every one of these patients read that material before you will let them see the doctor? And of course they don't. So she said, all I need to do is sign whatever forms you have for me to sign. And I'm here to see the doctor, and I don't intend to make another appointment. I intend to see the doctor today. And it worked.
But, thank you.
These things do happen, and they happen because we're blind. It doesn't happen because of any other reason. It happens because we're blind. So yes, we do have to contend with all of that. And when they offer you a computer to work with, you simply say to somebody, I need someone to help me with this, somebody who knows how to operate the gadget, and I would like to do it privately. I don't want to do it here in front of all these people in the waiting room. So, yes, you do have to do it. You don't have to be mean about it, but you do have to be firm and assertive.
Thank you.
Sandy?
Yes, Sandy.
And I think the other thing you have to do is also don't let them assume that the person who is with you is your caretaker, and have let them hand the device off to somebody else. Well, have your friend help you. No, I don't want my friend to help me. My sister was in that situation once with me, and she doesn't know the medical jargon. She doesn't know all that stuff. And I do, because that's the kind of work I used to do. But I want to do it with a nurse or somebody who knows enough about the questionnaires and the forms that are required. And Glenn is absolutely right. I will not do it in a waiting room full of people. And now, have you ever had, and I want to say yes to all the things that would make people, you know, which isn't true, but there's a lot of personal information on those forms, and it's there for reasons that don't need to be made public.
Yeah, you just don't want everybody.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
You just don't want strangers knowing your personal business.
That's right.
And do we have other questions or comments?
This is Deborah.
Yes, Deborah.
Another important factor is that not only is it your personal information, other people knowing it can misuse your information. And I'm talking about identity theft and all kind of stuff. And if you've ever been through that, you don't want to ever go through it again. I had a doctor's office that would send out cards with reminders with my social security number on it. And I was explaining to the receptionist that was not a very good idea. And she said, well, we just do it that way. And I said, well, you can just not do it that way, too. I said, would you like to have people from the penitentiary calling you? I've had people from the penitentiary calling me because the person who did ID theft on me had recently gotten out of the penitentiary. So if you want to volunteer for that, go right ahead.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there's all manner of reasons not to share personal information.
Absolutely.
Anyone else?
Well, I think a lot of it too that's getting frustrating is I'm older, and this is not a culture that is very nice to old people either. So it's a double whammy. And I think people are treating me like I'm losing my brain, when in reality I'm really having difficulty seeing them. So, but anyway, thank you. These ideas have been great and very helpful.
There is a raised hand. I think it's Anne-Marie Harris. And before she speaks, Judith, maybe we'll talk about the courtesy rules of blindness. You might be interested in that. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow at the chat.
We're going to take a question, but we are running short on time.
Okay, so. Anne-Marie Harris, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
No, that was Shelley. Shelley.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Is Anne there?
Is Emery... Did you have your hand raised, Shelley?
No.
Oh,
no.
Does Emery have her hand raised?
Did you see any hands raised?
Anne Marie did. She's still showing as muted. I sent you a request to unmute.
Thank you, honey. Thank you very much.
Yes, go ahead. If you can unmute.
She will. Let's see.
Anne Marie, if you're on a phone, it's star 6. If you're on Windows, I believe it's
she's on iPhone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bottom left corner, usually.
Yeah. Thank you.
I tell you what, maybe we can, Anne Marie, if you can remember that question, maybe tomorrow we can raise it again somewhere, somehow. Because our time is up. And echo, stop. The alarm that tells us this time has run out is the way it is, I guess. So
before we start the 5 seconds, I just want to thank Shelley, and I want to thank all of you for participating. I think it's been a good hour.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. We appreciate your participation. For more information, contact President Glenn Crosby at nfbseniors@gmail.com or call 443-681-9345. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.